listening to the Barcode Podcast with your host, Chris Glandon, serving cybersecurity straight up with no chaser. Let's hit the bar and grab a drink.
Welcome to Barcode. What can I get you, pal?
Oh, hey, buddy. Is Tony around?
Nah, he's off tonight. Something about him having trouble getting in the bar a few times, and then he got locked out. I think he just left, man. I'm covering for him, basically.
I got you. Well, I need a drink. Something different. You have any recommendations?
Oh, yeah, I got you. It's called Next Gen Fireball. Pint of apple cider beer. Pour a shot of your favorite cinnamon whiskey. Pretty much that's it. Here you go. Check it out, man.
Oh, dude, that's fire.
Glad you liked it. It's a fall favorite here, man. Enjoy, brother.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Barcode Podcast. Today on the show, cybersecurity and 3D printing unite. I'm here with two experts in both fields, Gabe Donsel and Scott Darko.
Gabe is currently the Director of Information Security for Drexel University in Philadelphia. He also has extensive experience in cybersecurity engineering and cyber resiliency program management. Scott's currently a senior security engineer at GuidePoint Security with vast experience in system design, development, analysis, and implementation. He has led engineering teams on challenging programs over full life cycle of a system on multiple DoD, TSA, and cybersecurity programs. Both gentlemen, along with myself, are cybersecurity professionals and avid 3D printing enthusiasts. So I look forward to this collaborative conversation, truly a meeting of the minds. So welcome to the show, guys.
Happy to be here.
Yeah.
All right.
Howdy.
How long have you guys been printing and designing 3D models? And what 3D printing or other AM technology do you guys currently own and use?
So I've been 3D printing for about 3 or 4 years. I bought my first printer as a kit. So it was basically a box with 1,000 pieces in it and some Chinese instructions and a few links to some YouTube videos. Put it together. It worked pretty well over the years. I think it was a really good learning experience on troubleshooting and, again, building it from the ground up. And then I will admit I got tired of troubleshooting and I wanted something that just worked. So I jumped on a deal on a Ender 3, which is right here, which has been super reliable, works great. And then I've added a few other printers along the way, which are relegated to the garage. As far as designing, I will say I have not really designed very many things. I'm pretty good at Tinkercad and modifying other designs to just more fit my needs, but not necessarily designing things from scratch.
That's great. Do you have any other technology that you've invested in or that you're testing, like a CNC or anything like that?
Yeah. Great question. So I'm just going to reveal one of my latest creations on the CNC machine. I have a little CNC. It can do wood carving, plexiglass, and very little else because of the way it's outpowered.
Gotcha.
That's not additive manufacturing, though. That's subtractive manufacturing, but it's all good.
Yeah, so I got introduced to CAD design back in mid-90s, kind of started out in high school time frame, going through some architecture classes and kind of doing some modeling way back then. Just recently here in the past 6 months or so, bought my first 3D printer, Delta Type FL Sun. And then doing a kind of some cool little models, but also doing some application to design, some actual product. A lot of home automation stuff that I get into. So I built some motor blocks and control panels for automating my blinds, mounting motors to the walls and controlling that function. So a lot of Raspberry Pis floating around through my house. Probably got about 15 to 20 of them.
Wow.
Not all of them are being used, but I do tinker with them quite a bit.
I guess I started printing around 2016 or so. I think Gabe ended up turning me onto it. Haven't really delved into the CNC platforms yet. It's something that I'm looking at doing. Unfortunately, my workspace is limited here, so can't invest at the time, but looking to sort of build one from scratch. Like you, Scott, I have the FL Sun as well, QQS, and a Monoprice Maker Select version 2, which hardly gets used anymore. So what are some of the most unique projects that you guys have done with your 3D printer? I know, Scott, you mentioned the auto blinds. Have you done anything else that is unique outside of standard downloadable models you can find online?
Yeah, some basic stuff. So I have a truck that I use for off-roading quite a bit. So just some creature comforts of building kind of just some custom washers and light fixtures, using some of the plastics that are don't have to really necessarily take a lot of stress, but do add in a little bit more functionality for whatever I'm using it for. But some little small one-offs. The home automation blinds, that was all the design I put together myself. Just really getting back into Tinkercad, what's where I started off with. I started to remember a lot of the old stuff that I used to do with modeling. Really wish there was some more functionality in that tool. So I'm starting to look around for some better capabilities and tools out there that you might have to walk away from the freeware type thing and actually get into a subscription-based type service for it.
Yeah, I know Fusion 360 is one. I haven't really gotten into that too much, but yeah, you definitely, yeah. There's a point where you cross that threshold and start looking for more advanced capability.
I'm ready to admit, I pretty much just print things that you can download or things that you can modify and improve the printers so you can print more things that you can download. With that said, though, I mean, the part that sort of interests me the most is the tinkering part. The repair, improving, the integration with Raspberry Pi and web servers that you can use to monitor your prints, like we use with Octoprint. And then the other piece of it that sort of got my attention was trying to do time lapses of the prints, just using different cameras, different again different integrations with Raspberry Pis. Connecting Raspberry Pis together, or even tinkering with Linux installs to try to get everything to work.
Gotcha. I actually had a hard time coming up with an answer to this, my own question, and I had to think about it. I guess in my case, one of the more complex designs I built from scratch was a working prototype of customized knee pads that a friend of mine that works in the construction field sketched out on paper long before I got into 3D printing. So after I explained some of the capabilities of my printer and what it could print, I took that sketch and essentially built it out in Tinkercad. It hasn't taken off yet, and I'm not rich off of it yet, so it's still a work in progress. And another project I looked into potentially getting into when COVID really took off was printing ventilator supplies or masks during the mask shortage. So Scott, I noticed you have a crazy looking mask there. Is that CDC approved?
Yes, but the particular filter that I bought, it is. I just got to work on the gasket material around the face so it actually seals solid. So it's still a little bit of work in progress. I've got some HEPA filters that have cut to size in there. So we'll put some masking material around the outside of it just so it actually fits flush. Then having the beard, I got to work around that too. So I might just cut some lines down through.
Nice. Yeah, I got to say that's the coolest mask I've seen yet.
Yeah, it's going to be a hit at the grocery store. it's going to be popular. No. The one thing I was going to say, Chris, is that I've seen you do quite a bit is, and I've done a few, but not as many as you, is functional prints. So all kinds of holders for all kinds of things, remote holders, battery holders, spray can holders. They're already pre-made, and you just with very little customization, you can get those printed and screwed onto the wall in no time.
Mm-hmm. I did a wine rack not too long ago for a gift, and I'm setting up a fish tank now at this point. So I'm printing out all the kind of like the valves and type of water flow things that I want to put in there. So testing out the materials and see what's approved for fish tank use, and making sure that it's a nice clean environment there, but also putting some cool functional stuff.
Have you found any material that is fit for being underwater?
Yep. So the PLA, actually, I've looked into it. it's not actually recommended for like storing food in, because it is slightly porous and it will retain bacteria and things like that. But when in the case of a fish tank, that's not necessarily a bad thing. So I've been setting it in the water, letting it sit for about a week or two now, and I'm just testing the water quality and see whether it's, if I've seen any kind of spikes or anything like that. So not recommended for food usage or microwaving, but in a fish tank, it says it's good.
Nice. Yeah, don't put it in the dishwasher and let it nope. Heat dry. That's for sure.
Yeah.
All right. So switching gears to cybersecurity. So looking at cybersecurity risks with 3D printing, what comes to mind when you focus on those two, and how do you think of cybersecurity risk when it comes to 3D printing in relation to other risks and other common threats that we protect against in the cybersecurity field? For example, malware, cybersecurity fraud or cyber fraud, identity theft, things like that.
I'll go first. There's a couple of examples that I can come up with. The first one is you're clearly downloading code from the internet and put it into a program, and then letting that program ingest the code and spit something out for your printer. But it gets even worse. In some cases, it's code that you download and you put right in your printer. And there are ways that you can manipulate that code to make your printer do crazy things like catch on fire, for example. That would be bad. Or it could just be something as simple as the file is for a different manufacturer type printer. It could just have adverse consequences on your printer, like damaging the builds, damaging the motors, things like that. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is pretty similar, and I've sort of experienced that myself. For some of the configurations, you're basically blindly just about following commands that somebody's posted on the internet or on some YouTube video, and you're trying to configure either something on a Raspberry Pi or something on your Arduino configuration, and you know, being that is something that you don't necessarily, in my case, have any experience with, you're just following some guide from someone that was posted on the internet, and there's some limited check-in of what you're typing in that you can do with limited experience. So, I mean, you know, you can look up the commands or you can make sure somebody reputable. I would say it's sort of similar to a third-party risk in that sense. If you would, you know, you have to do your check, making sure the person that you're following and the documentation you're following is from a reputable source and is somebody that's well-regarded in the community. So you can feel pretty confident at following the guide and making sure you don't, again, catch anything on fire or putting some weird code in your Raspberry Pi that turns it into a beacon for who knows what botnet.
I'll follow right along onto that, because that's where I see on the network side, you have a lot more network-connected devices, our Raspberry Pis, our Octoprint, our laptops, your printer itself has network capabilities. And those are kind of the devices that get overlooked when you're trying to maintain like a patching cycle on them, keeping them up to date. Do they have certain ports turned on or off? With the amount of Raspberry Pis that I have in my home, they are all sectioned off to their own network, so that I use a lot more network segmentation to protect these devices, so there's not personal information going across it. But also don't want someone catching my printer on fire because they found that there was a port open somewhere. And it's nice to have your camera focused on it so you can see how well your print's doing and make sure it's not gone off the reel or anything like that. But it's just yet one more source that you've opened up to the outside of your network. That's another potential threat vector. So that's most of the things that I see.
And I'm just going to add on to that, because the devices just keep multiplying. My printers are plugged into a smart switch so that I can control them with an app. And then I also monitor the printers with a Wyscam, which again is connected to the network. To where it's possible, having those devices segmented on their own, you know, with a different router is going to be key for sure.
Mm-hmm.
it's just, I'm surprised every time I log into my routers and I'm just like looking at the number of devices that are in there. I'm just amazed. It's Echoes, Google Home, other speakers, computers, Raspberry Pis. It's just, they keep on multiplying.
Yeah, and who they're communicating with, that's another mystery sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah, don't look at those logs. It's scary.
Yeah, and I think a 3D printer could be weaponized from the perspective of using its capabilities to infect others.
There's a site out there right now that's QR code STL. You basically can feed it a URL. You can feed it whatever you want, and it'll spit out a QR code for you. You know, I did my own, and I thought it was pretty cool. And then I was like, well, what if someone wants to redirect to a malicious URL, put free Wi-Fi on it, and put it in a doctor's office somewhere without them knowing? And when they connect, have it ask for a payment. It almost reminds me of the Bluetooth skimmers where, you know, you can set it and forget it and wait for the victim to come to you.
I mean, it's just basic social engineering, right?
Yep.
It's just another tool that people can use in their arsenal. I mean, you could print it and, you know, print it like with a regular printer, stick it all around town. But it's definitely, you know, it gives it like a little fancier look.
Yeah, I mean, it sparks interest too. I mean, and it's going to be cheaper than buying a box of USB thumb drives to do social engineering attacks and drop them in the parking lot. You can drop one by one QR codes that you can print for pennies and hopefully have someone scan that and maybe label it something intriguing. I don't know, but just another way that, you know, the printer in the hands of an attacker could be detrimental. And I was thinking along the lines of fingerprints too. Like if you can get a fingerprint online, what's stopping you from printing that and potentially using that on biometric scanning or something like that?
Yeah. The other thing is with 3D scanning and 3D printing, there's also a way it's possible. I've seen a couple of videos. It didn't really work, but it just as I think as the technology evolves, it's possible that it could be used to take somebody's picture or even a 3D scan that you can do and 3D print their face and then use that 3D print face to unlock their phone. So, I mean, there are things that you can take a little bit to the extreme, it would seem, but we're probably not far away from that.
If it's a huge target, like an organization, someone might, you know, go through the process of doing that. So what other cybersecurity risks come to mind when you think about organizations? So in particular, manufacturing plants or production lines, you know, there's some big name organizations out there that are using 3D printers now for building out things like functional prototypes, tooling, and lightweight components to be used in their products. What do you see as the biggest threat against those production lines leveraging 3D printing tech?
I see it kind of, I think I saw an article not too long ago of about kind of injecting some code so that these parts can become fundamentally critically a risk so that it breaks down in a way that it can produce harm to whoever's kid or whatever this device is going into a product line or something along that kind of story. So say a bad example, but like the clip on your seatbelt buckle, if somebody's testing out a new design, first, what kind of tests do they go through to validate that it actually does meet all the requirements or safety constraints? But what about someone maliciously injecting a piece of bad printing code into it so that it comes a failure after, say, 2 months of use or something like that? So there's a couple of things in there that there's a lot of steps that have to go into place for something like that probably to happen. But it's not uncommon, especially in manufacturing plants where there's a lot of antiquated systems throughout environment because they are expensive and they tend to work for decades upon decades. So there's a lot of where we mentioned kind of the network segmentation, making sure that you have your systems updated and who has access to it and what you're actually using these for in the long term. It's one thing to be prototyping something to see if it fits. It's another to see if it meets any kind of safety constraints.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just some things are designed in-house without that check or that, you know, that QA that's needed. Gabe, any thoughts?
No, I mean, that's great. That's a good point. I think, you know, beyond a little bit the cybersecurity concerns, I think you also have the intellectual property concerns, right? I mean, what software you're using to design these parts, or is something that you're downloading or uploading to one of the websites that, you know, you can download files from and inadvertently disclose some intellectual property for your organization. I know a lot of these 3D printing projects or websites use GitHub also for some of their code. So that could be a potential for exposing your company data. I think the segmentation piece, again, is key. Without that, I mean, to Scott's point, where you're sending the file to the printer, you know, a lot of the times people use memory cards, flash drives. So there is an opportunity there to bridge that air gap potentially with some kind of malware. Or the other alternative is using a web interface to connect to your printer, which again, it can lead to injecting code. The computer, the printers have to be on the network. Potentially, if they're infected, they could be sending those files to your competitor, for all we know.
You mentioned injecting code. So, you know, imagine if a hacker can penetrate the network, access that system, and alter the G code in any way, could be disastrous. And right now, without any really visibility into that or a known tool to have visibility, there's zero flaw detection. You know, if there's a flaw in a line other than the print being altered, I don't think there's any detection method out there right now that would notify that production plant that there was a flaw. So I guess my follow-up to that is, what can companies do to protect themselves?
I jumped straight to kind of the QA, which was brought up here just a second ago. That's really a very thorough process that needs to happen. I know a couple of family friend welders that they use all kinds of types of devices to make sure a weld is actually thoroughly penetrates between the pieces they're putting together. There are tools out there because we are talking about a physical model. So I don't know if there's something, sonar, Doppler, scanner of some sort to penetrate through the plastic to see how thick or how structurally sound a part is. So QA, I think, is a long way to go there, because it's one thing to test out software to see if it's actually putting out G code like it's supposed to.
Yeah, it's almost like taking a hash of that G code and then doing verification checks.
I was going to say, the other thing that you can do from the code checking perspective, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think that there's anything out there that checks the code, but the one function that I've used a couple of times, you can have a virtual printers and you can sort of simulate that you're printing a file without actually printing anything, but it's checking against the configuration of your printer to find out if, you know, anything's out of spec, like the temperatures are out of spec, or the size of the print head movement is, you know, something goofy going on there outside of the dimensions of your printer. So that is something that can be done, maybe something that, you know, can be implemented in a more wide scale, easier to use.
There was a recent research study that was just released, and it recommended a code of conduct, quote unquote, and a new regulatory body be established to develop oversight and prevent tracing, tracking, and observing objects, which can reveal an incredible amount of information about the users. Do you guys agree? Have you had a chance to see that? And what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I took a look through the article. It's interesting to see, because some of it kind of parallels to me, that it's like when all of your printers, your 2D printers had watermarks added into the configurations for them. So everything that gets printed out has some kind of watermark on a piece of paper. That was kind of to circumvent counterfeiting builds, was really the big driving factor there. So it's still put into place in all firmwares on every printer that I'm aware of. So now taking it to another dimension, kind of surprising me that that doesn't already exist. So it's interesting, yes, kind of understanding what's the need for a regulatory body. Another parallel will be to what the government is doing with drones, as far as commercial use of drones. They make it so they can't fly in certain airspace. So is there something, do you see a benefit of having our printers controlled that way, our 3D printers? I don't know if there's anything good or bad that I could say about it, except that there's more lulls around it, I guess. So what's the trade-off of having our stuff tracked versus not having it tracked? Are we looking for intellectual property rights so that we're getting paid for things that we develop? And because you'll see a lot of stuff like on Etsy or something like that, where people are selling other people's prints that they put out for free and put it under the right copyright law, and they're not, someone else is making money off of it. It does happen. I've seen a lot of Raspberry Pis set up the same way with some of your old like gaming emulators put up, and those are being sold for hundreds of dollars just because of the way they're configured. There's arguments to both sides of it. I want to make my money if I'm actually selling some of this stuff or designing it. I want to get validated for it. Does watermarking really solve that or change anything?
Yeah, I mean, you can get like a Patreon account or something and sell it. That's not preventing someone else from taking that and reselling it, and no one would ever know. So I guess, does it take away from having that watermark feature? Does it take away from a person's engineering creativity and design and the design aspect? Or do you think it fuels that even more and makes them feel more protected?
I would say I'd feel more protected knowing that whatever I've printed, my own signature, whatever it is documented within that print somehow. Now, I don't know how'd you do that besides just not printing your own, print a signature in the device itself, or put a blank space somewhere, or if you got a dual extruder type setup, you print in a different color and that you can scan with something along those kind of lines.
Yeah. So I got an example right here. I don't know if you can see it, but, anyway, I downloaded and printed this little motor, prints all in one piece. But the designer, whose name is Sunshine, included his own watermark, I guess you would call it, right?
Yep.
On the print. So that way, if you post it, take any pictures, or try to do anything with it, you know, that shows up. A couple of the people, I know Chris mentioned a couple of the designers that designed pretty cool models. Some of them are free, some of them are paid, but if you print the model, it has their signature on the back, you know, very similar to the way that that's done.
Yeah, even the most famous print out there, the Benchy, you print that out, it has
right.
a signature underneath. But then where Tinkercad comes in, like what's to stop you from going on there and clearing that name and put your own?
Well, I mean, you know, that's just a basic intellectual property situation right there. I mean, ask Vanilla Ice how he feels about that tune and see how that worked out for him.
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, to be honest, companies have been doing that, right? I think Lego is one of the famous companies. Disney is another one where they've scoured places like Pinterest and other sites, and they've taken down and thrown their lawyers at people that are selling 3D printed Disney themes. And I'm pretty sure Lego had a whole bunch of designs taken off of a lot of the websites because they were open sourcing. The design and making things that were compatible, and you could 3D print your own blocks. You know, they don't like that. So is there proprietary intellectual property? So they're going to go after the companies that are distributing that. Very similar to, again, the music and the movie industry.
Exactly. Yeah, I was just getting ready to say, I see this taking sort of a Napster route. So you put as much protection on as you possibly can, but I just feel like there's always going to be a way to bypass it. But having a regulatory force there, I think will help, you know, manage that.
I mean, the other thing I was going to say is, you know, similar to the drone situation, there are, I think, two sides of it. One is the commercial side of it, which is where a lot of the regulation comes in. There's also, with 3D printing and drones, there's the DIY side of it. Some of these printers is like you buy the board here, the motors there, and you can print your own parts to make the rest of it. You get some pieces of wood and some metal from Lowe's or Home Depot, or buy it, you know, off of the internet, and poof, you have a 3D printer. That's going to be very, very hard to protect or regulate. similar to, not to get into something controversial right off the start, but similar to some of the things that you can 3D print, right? You can 3D print weapons, and they're made out of plastic.
And there are sites for that that we will not mention.
I remember that being a big thing about 5 or 10 years ago, some of those prints coming out.
Oh, yeah. Whenever I tell someone I have a 3D printer, can you print a gun? That's normally the first question I get asked. No.
All my friends want skulls.
There's plenty of those on Thingiverse. Mm-hmm. Just curious, what sites do you guys use? Are there any safer sites than others for getting STLs or 3D models? The top three I use are Thingiverse, obviously, Cults, and
My Mini Factory.
Yeah, those are the things that seem to pop up all the time that seem to have the right things that I want, or at least get some ideas. And like I said, we've all probably kind of downloaded some of the pre-designed models and modify them to fit our needs or whatever we're trying to do with it. But some of the stuff that I have designed myself does spawn off of some other ideas. Like there's my power supply and Raspberry Pi mount for my automated blinds. I found a wall socket plate that had a little Raspberry Pi mount on it. And I completely modified that after getting that idea so that I can actually mount a power supply onto it. It actually screwed into the wall outlet itself, and I can still pull power off of it. So it was something where it wasn't a completely original design, but it was definitely all of my design that I put together. Very simple block type structure, but grabbing nice. That idea at least got my mind flowing to figure out a way to mount something to a wall that I didn't normally think of.
Nice.
Yeah, and I think again going back to that whole community feel of 3D printing, right? I mean, a lot of the people, I know I've done these, you know, you download something from Thingiverse or whatever, and then right there's a button that says upload a remix. So that's what I do. And then, you know, upload that, take a couple of pictures, put it on there. Because, I mean, if you're finding it useful, there's somebody else that's going to find it useful too.
Yeah, the reason I was asking about the sites is I think as this gains popularity, you have to watch out for sketchy sites popping up, and I'm starting to see them now a little bit. You know, you download what you think is a code and try to run it. I think we talked about this before. It could be something totally different. You know, back to like the Pirate Bay days. You think you're getting Fast and the Furious, but you're not.
I mean, then again, it's the internet, right? So some parts are fine, and some parts are the Wild Wild West, and
exactly.
Some parts are even worse, right? The one that I saw not long ago, I don't know if I sent this guy this your way, was somebody that had gone through and gotten a Patreon account at a few different people, downloaded their models, re-uploaded them to some other pay site, and they were charging other people for somebody else's models. And advertising on places like Instagram and Twitter, things like that. I mean, at the end of the day, because it's such a global hobby, you could have somebody in a country that they don't really have any idea that those designs are stolen to begin with. So it is, you know, it is complicated for sure.
Yeah, even with that digital watermark, they don't know if that's coming from the reseller or from the original designer.
Right.
There's no way they would know. What would you guys suggest to that home consumer to protect their 3D printer?
I know I've bought power supplies from sources that I should not have trusted. And they could turn into some very vicious things. That's not doing anything with cybersecurity. A bad power supply is a bad power supply. So make sure if you're building your own design or whatever you're doing, you're getting something that's made for what you expected to do. And is it safe in your environment? And that's just a simple thing, especially with the DIY market.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I was just to add to that. I mean, I would say just take it slow. And it probably the thing that worries me the most, regardless of, you know, if you build your own printer, if you buy one from a reputable company or whatever, is, you know, some of these prints can take days. So you can't really be there. Well, since we're confined to our house, we can. But you know, you can't really be watching it the whole time, just in case something goes haywire. I would say more of a, you know, before you even worry about cybersecurity, worry about physical security first. Things like a smoke detector, a camera to watch it, you know, keep an eye on it. I mean, you can get a Wyze camera. Unofficial plug here for Wyze, because I have several other cameras, but you can get a Wyze camera for $25. I mean, that's pretty cheap, and that's going to give you, you know, just like a little peace of mind. Even if it's as the last thing you check before you go to sleep, and then the first thing you check when you wake up, just to make sure it's still going, you know, just take it slow. I mean, don't, you know, buy a printer, put it together, and then launch a 38-hour print right from the start and hope that that's going to work, because for the most part, it's not. It's just a lot of tinkering, a lot of tweaking, a lot of improving the design. And then once you're comfortable with the technology, then going for some of the more, you know, advanced projects.
Yeah, it's just one thing to be connected. So with, it's something as simple as a tower getting knocked over by the printer. So it's just your printer starts printing in the midair. Your filament runs out, or it gets tangled at the top so that it just breaks and you're wasting time printing because your printer's print's already failed. Just knowing that, that peace of mind that you're, if you're going to walk away or go to bed for the night or going to go away on vacation for the weekend, make sure you know what's going on. I've got some of the internet connected smoke detectors as well. So kind of having something like that, at least being aware what some of the concerns might be.
Yeah, I mean, the other point I think, Scott, you mentioned it is, even if nothing goes wrong from the physical perspective, it's just the thing gets knocked over, which it happens, and then it's printing in midair, it's still a waste. And yeah, some of the filament can be pretty expensive. So from that perspective, you know, avoiding that would be a great idea.
Yeah, it's like when you leave for vacation and you're 2 hours in and you're like, did I leave the iron plugged in? And if you don't have an iron with that automatic shut off, then you're making a U-turn.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
I would advise consumers to always, you know, have their software updated, you know, along with everything on your home computer. Your OS is always good to have software updated. If you're running any internet connected device, maybe a Raspberry Pi, make sure that your code is up to date. Obviously, you know, network segmentation, or simply just sneaker net the files to the 3D printer.
So I have one more for you. This is last call. If you opened a cybersecurity themed bar, what would the name be? And what would your signature drink be called?
I don't know. Cybersecurity themed bar.
It could be cybersecurity 3D printer themed bar. Make it really unique.
Cybersecurity 3D printing themed bar. I really don't know, but you know, you could make some really good raspberry drinks.
There you go. Just,
have them raspberry pie theme, and I think that would be a good combination of the both. Unfortunately, I'm stuck with light beer for now.
Yeah, I got word of this question a little bit, so I thought about something. I'm not really good at these, so I like the idea of called social engineering being a bar, just something as simple as that. The other one that I liked was a search bar. Simple.
Oh, yeah. And then, those are good.
And then the drink, I can only come up with one drink. This is the hard part. So I want to do Cypher Cider.
Nice.
Yeah. Right. Don't know exactly what it would be, except that it's cider. Maybe put some a tumbler block in it for, for your cipher.
I like that. I think it would be a hit. We got
to
do it.
I was trying to come up with some kind of acronym for DLP besides data loss prevention.
Don't lose your patience.
Yeah. It works. All right, fellas, I think that's all I have. I appreciate you joining and sharing your expert insight. Scotty, Gabe, if you want to send over some cool 3D prints, if you have pictures of what you've done or videos.
Am I the only one that's even showing some of the 3D printed knickknacks? I have the three-cylinder engine.
This is typically audio only, but I think we're going to give an exclusive look to your workshop.
I have the octopus. This is good for, you know, with all the Zoom and team meetings.
This fidget spinner.
This is a good one to keep a hand. And then back there, I have the Millennium Falcon, always a favorite. I have a couple of those, in fact.
Yeah, I'm not in a position to get to my prints, but what I'm thinking is on the barcodepodcast.com, I can have a section where viewers can go in and check out some of our prints and videos. I know
definitely.
You do time lapses. I've done some, but you're kind of the master at the time lapse. I'm sure our viewers and listeners would love to see that.
Cool.
All right, guys. Well, thanks again.
All right. Appreciate having us on.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, it's time to shut the bar down for this episode. Thanks for stopping in. See you next time. We'll save you a seat. Be sure to check us out at thebarcodepodcast.com.